British Sky Broadcasting, DreamWorks, Paramount Pictures, and Nickelodeon Movies present Lemony Snicket, a series of unfortunate events. Directed by Brad Silberling. Starring Jim Carrey, Billy Connolly, Meryl Streep, and Jude Law as the storyteller Lemony Snicket. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. The wealthy parents of three children are killed in a fire. When the orphans are sent to a weird relative who's after their legacy, they fear for their lives. Cartoon woodpeckers tap out DreamWorks on a tree trunk. A pink bird flutters down to a stream amongst fairy tale woods. The words Paramount Pictures appear in flowers. There are little houses made of toadstools. Flowers in a row are singing. An elf comes out of a toadstool house smiling. The title The Littlest Elf appears. A chorus of squirrels pops up. A butterfly lands on the elf's nose. As the elf is dancing in the fairy tale woods, it suddenly goes dark.
I'm sorry to say that this is not the movie you will be watching. The movie you are about to see is extremely unpleasant. If you wish to see a film about a happy little elf, I'm sure there is still plenty of seating in theatre number two. However, if you like stories about clever and reasonably attractive orphans, suspicious spires, carnivorous leeches, Italian food, and secret organisations, then stay, as I retrace each and every one of the Baudelaire children's woeful steps. My name is Lemony Snicket, and it is my sad duty to document this tale. Violet Baudelaire, the eldest, was one of the finest 14-year-old inventors in the world. Anyone who knew Violet well could tell she was inventing something when her long hair was tied up in a ribbon. In a world of abandoned items and discarded materials, Violet knew there was always something. Something she could fashion into nearly any device for nearly every occasion. And no one was better to test her inventions than her brother. Klaus Baudelaire, the middle child, loved books. Or rather, the things he learned from books. The Baudelaire parents had an enormous library in their mansion, a room filled with thousands of books on nearly every subject. And nothing pleased Klaus more than spending an afternoon filling up his head with their contents. And everything he read, he remembered. Sunny, the youngest, had a different interest. She liked to bite things and had four sharp teeth. There was very little that Sunny did not enjoy biting.
Sunny hangs by her teeth from a table. She plays Scrabble with her brother and sister with chewed letters.
Sunny was at an age when one mostly speaks in a series of unintelligible shrieks. For instance, which probably meant, look at that mysterious figure emerging from the fog. Or perhaps, what is a banker like Mr. Poe doing, trudging through the sand to find us at Briny Beach?
Children, I'm afraid I must inform you of an extremely unfortunate event. I'm very, very sorry to tell you this, but your parents have perished in a fire that's destroyed your entire home.
If you have ever lost someone very important to you, then you already know how it feels. And if you haven't, you cannot possibly imagine it.
Klaus and Violet, carrying Sunny, walk through the smoke into a burnt-out house.
No one knows the precise cause of the Baudelaire fire. My colleagues and I have investigated the best we can, but all we've discovered is that the blaze was started from a great distance through the refraction and convergence of light. And within moments, the entire mansion was in flames.
Violet looks upset. Firemen walk down the remains of a charred staircase. Violet leans into a cabinet and picks up a picture of her parents in silhouette on glass. Klaus kneels and picks up a lamp for wearing on the head. He puts it on and shines the beam on the smoking, burnt-out room.
And as mysterious as the source of the blaze, other mysteries began to unfold before the children's eyes. Every family has its secrets, doors left unopened. But as Klaus now realized, the smallest discovery would send his mind reeling with questions. What was this spyglass hidden in his father's desk? Were there other secrets about their parents' lives yet to be revealed? Questions he now feared might never be answered. And just like that, the Baudelaire children became the Baudelaire orphans. I tried to warn you.
Lemony is holding a photo of the destroyed mansion.
This is an excellent opportunity to walk out of the theatre, living room or airplane where this film is being shown. It's not too late to see a film about a happy little elf.
Yes, come with me.
Now, as chief officer of Mulctuary Management and the executor of your parents' estate, it is my legal obligation to take care of your money till you come of age and to place you in the care of your closest relative. So I'm taking you to live with your dear Count Olaf, who resides right here in the city, just 37 blocks away.
I don't think that's what closest is supposed to mean.
We don't know a Count Olaf.
Yes, yes, of course you do. He's either your third cousin four times removed or your fourth cousin three times removed.
Sonny.
And he's an actor by trade. Isn't that exciting, children? Well, you should count yourselves lucky, children. This sort of generosity is rare in a person of his profession.
Mr. Poe stops the car.
Ah, here we are, your new home. Isn't it lovely, children?
The children look at a cottage.
Oh, hello. You must be the Baudelaires.
Hi.
I'm so sorry to hear about the accident, but so happy to hear you were coming here.
Welcome, I'm Justice Strauss of the City High Court.
I'm Violet, and this is my brother Klaus and my sister Sunny.
Poe, Mulctuary Management, how do you do?
Lovely.
Your house is so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Please don't be strangers. You come and visit me anytime you like.
Visit?
You mean you don't live with Count Olaf?
Live with Count Olaf? No. No, 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 no. He's my neighbor.
She looks across the road. The children follow her gaze. A wolf-like dog runs in front of what looks like a haunted house. Old, dark, and spooky. Violet frowns. Sunny's gurgle means let's sleep outside. Looking around, they follow Mr. Poe and approach the steps leading to the front door. Violet carries Sunny. Mr. Poe tries to use the knocker on the wooden front door. A hole appears in the centre of a carved eye. He peers through the hole at a dark figure. It slams shut. Klaus and Violet look at each other. Mr. Poe is about to knock again.
Intrude!
Mr. Poe beckons to the children. He opens the front door.
You haven't got all day. In you go.
They walk in slowly to a huge hall full of pillars.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am your beloved Count Olaf. And welcome to my loverly home. May you find solace within the womb-like warmth of its downy gloom. Or as the Greeks in the ancient times would say, Orphanus and Cribbo. Something, something, something. Music builds to a crescendo. Ending on the right foot and strike a posse. Not exactly what I was going for, but you get the idea.
Count Olaf is tall and bald. He wears a long coat and has a tattoo of an eye on his ankle.
Oh, my dear
The children's names are written on his hands.
Violet. Enchanté.
How do you do?
And this must be Klaus. Young Klaus.
He turns Klaus's head.
Your left side is the good one. And what is this?
Sunny says, I'm Sunny.
I'm sorry, I don't speak monkey. Banana.
I'm not a monkey.
Sunny's our sister.
I must say, you're a gloomy-looking bunch. Why so glum?
Our parents just died.
Oh, yes, of course. How very, very awful. Wait, let me do that one more time. Give me the line again, quickly, while it's fresh in my mind.
Our parents just died?
Oh, yes.
Sunny says, what a schmuck.
Mr. Poe. I will raise these orphans as if they were actually wanted. And though you would call it a burden, a sacrifice, you are mistaken, sir, and should be ashamed of yourself. The idea. Anyway, where do I sign for the fortune? I mean, children.
Oh, you won't officially have guardianship until the hearing on Thursday morning.
And what am I to do with them until then?
Excuse me?
What I mean is, do you work out? You look good, healthy, I mean.
Well, I'd better get back to the bank.
Oh, can't you stay for a brief revivement? A glass of port? Sanka?
Oh, well, I suppose I can.
Another time, then.
Now, children, remember, if you need anything,
oh,
do feel
no,
free
we're
to
fine.
Call them.
We're all fine.
Any questions?
The children look worried. Olaf looks mad.
I realize that my humble abode isn't as fancy as the Baudelaire mansion. But I'm coming into a great deal of money soon. And I think it'll be quite charming when it's finished. Shall we take a look?
This is the living room. The kitchen. I know what you're thinking. This place could use a little TLC. I trust you've had your tetanus shots. Polio, smallpox, typhoid, malaria. This is the entertainment or rumpus room. I'm told the ceiling can be brought up to code in no time. You're not afraid of heights, are you? Imagine that. A monkey afraid of heights.
My theater. This way.
What's that up there?
Olaf looks up a stairwell.
The tower. You are never to enter. Under any circumstances.
Olaf leans forward with his hook nose and wild eyebrows. He looks terrifying, but then hides a giggle.
And this is where you'll sleep, time permitting. Nighty-night.
But the sun's still up. Don't do that.
I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but first impressions are often entirely wrong. For instance, Klaus, when Sunny was born, didn't like her at all. But by the time she was 6 weeks old, the two of them were thick as thieves. A phrase which here means fetching and biting for hours on end. In the case of Count Olaf, however,
orphans!
They were correct. Every morning, Count Olaf would order the Baudelaires to do a great number of terrible chores, after which he would stalk off to his mysterious tower room.
The children are washing up huge heaps of crockery in the gloomy kitchen. Violet opens a cupboard. There are rats in it.
And as unfortunate as their situation seemed, it was only about to get worse.
And I realised that these clever girls had stolen my kidney.
No!
Imagine my surprise!
Orphans, this is my acting troupe. Acting troupe.
They don't look rich.
Ugly little people.
The children are kneeling on the floor, scrubbing.
Why aren't you children in the kitchen preparing our dinner?
Dinner?
It's the French word for the evening meal.
Klaus looks at the list of chores.
On the back.
He turns it over.
We'll take it in the dining room at 8 o'clock. And we'll expect absolute silence while we're rehearsing our play.
But we've never made dinner before. It's already 7:30.
8 o'clock!
Violet opens a cupboard. It's full of creepy crawlies. Klaus opens a cupboard. Inside, a bug wriggles on its back. Sunny opens a cupboard. Inside, a bat flaps its wings. They open cupboards and drawers full of rubbish. Violet shakes her head as she finds a few bits of pasta.
Pasta it is.
Okay. Let's start casting this puppy.
Yeah.
Now, who shall play the most handsome count in all the world?
With his long body, he strikes a pose on a throne decorated with eyes.
Would you do it, sir?
Oh, all right.
Pasta puttanesca. That's Italian for very few ingredients, you know.
That's great. Sunny, a little help?
She gives her a can.
Okay, we're gonna need a pot.
No pot.
And a strainer?
No strainer.
Thank you.
The can's open.
And a saucepan.
This is a little piece I like to call electric chair.
He sits on his throne. The actors stare in disbelief.
I think you might have to turn it up. Is anybody out there?
Strainer? That's brilliant.
Sunny, how's that pot coming?
Sunny says, voila.
Sunny, that's not a pot. It's a spittoon.
A spittoon? You mean like... Yeah. We'll wash it twice.
Violet drains the pasta.
Well...
Good. It's really good.
Time check.
Let's go back to prehistoric times when dinosaurs ruled the earth.
The actors sleep through Olaf's performance. Klaus and Violet lay the table.
Baudelaire orphans to the courtesy desk. Baudelaire orphans to the courtesy desk.
They stand at the end of the table and look at each other.
What do you want?
Dinner is served.
Olaf has been lying on the floor, sucking his thumb. He stands up.
Puttanesca.
What did you call me?
It's pasta. Pasta puttanesca.
Where's the roast beef?
Roast beef?
Beef, yes, roast beef. It's the Swedish term for beef that is roasted.
But you didn't tell us you wanted roast beef.
The actors look nervous.
You know, there's a big world out there, filled with desperate orphans who would gladly swim across an ocean of thumbtacks just to be eclipsed by the long shadow that is cast by my accomplishments. But I don't care about them. I chose to open my heart to you two lovely children. And your hideous primate. All I ask in return is that you do each and everything that pops into my head while I enjoy the enormous fortune your parents left behind.
No.
Why, you little...
Oh!
Back off, parrot face, says Sunny. I'll bite higher. Don't mock me.
Oh.
Wow, you are nuts.
It's time you children learned a little respect.
Put her down!
He picks up Sunny and slaps Klaus.
Monster!
Violet snatches Sunny back.
You all saw it. The boy slipped.
You won't get a cent until Violet turns 18.
Oh, really? Says who?
The law. Look it up.
We're going to call Mr. Poe about this right now.
Ooh. 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 Are you?
Olaf pushes the children into a dark attic.
I'm very disappointed in you children.
He locks the door.
Where were we?
Are you okay?
No.
Klaus pulls a wooden bar from the window.
Klaus, what are you doing?
I'm going.
Going where?
Home.
This is our home now.
This is not home. Home is where your parents put you to bed at night, where they teach you to ride a bike, or where they get all choked up on your first day of school. This is not home.
Violet sighs.
How could they do this to us?
They're just bad people.
Not them. Mom and Dad.
Klaus?
What, Violet, you're thinking it too. How could they? They have no plan for us at all?
Well, maybe they did have a plan.
Well, sure looks like it to me.
Klaus sits down. Violet joins him.
Do you remember when Mom and Dad went to Europe? And we thought they'd abandoned us because they didn't even write. And then we found out they'd written a long letter, just gotten lost in the mail. Do you remember how guilty we felt for thinking bad thoughts about them? This is just like that.
No, it's not.
Why?
Because they're not in Europe. They're not coming back. Do you think anything will ever feel like home again?
Violet takes a ribbon from her waistband and ties up her hair, smiling at Klaus. She uses Klaus's torch to project the silhouettes of her parents onto a makeshift screen.
Sanctuary is a word which here means a small safe place in a troubling world. Like an oasis in a vast desert or an island in a stormy sea. The Baudelaires enjoyed their evening in the sanctuary they had built together. But in their hearts, they knew that the troubling world lay just outside. A world which, I'm sad to say, can be described in two dismal words.
Custody granted.
He snatches the certificate from the judge.
Thank you, Your Honor. Nice doing business with you.
Olaf drives the children home. He watches them in a series of mirrors on the dashboard.
Children, I've been contemplating a situation, and I realize that I've been a bit standoffish, shall we say, which in this case is a big, big word, meaning
pure evil,
tough, fair. But now that we're family, I can make it up to you. I can be the ultimate dad. I know. Let's stop for a treat.
He breaks hard outside a dingy shack which says Last Chance Superette.
Soda, banana.
Sonny says, bite me.
Got it.
Olaf gets out and, grinning, taps the roof of the car. As he walks to the shop, he locks the car remotely. Klaus looks as if he has an idea as he watches Olaf and the car locks go down.
Violet? Where'd the locks go?
Violet finds a book in the car and holds it up for Klaus to see. It's called Inheritance, the Law and You.
Hello. I'm going on a perfectly innocent ride in the country with my kids, whom I love. Is that clock correct?
Violet finds a piece of paper in the book, a list of times. 11:15 is circled.
What is it?
I think it's a schedule.
They look at each other, then the dashboard clock. It says 11:15. They peer out of the car window and realize that they're parked across a railway track.
Kiwi watermelon surprise. My favourite.
Olaf picks a drink from the shop fridge. The bottles vibrate. He closes his eyes. A littlest elf doll on the car back shelf starts to laugh. The children stare in horror.
Go!
They lunge at the car doors, trying to open them. Violet leaps into the driver's seat. Klaus hammers at the window.
He took the keys.
Try everything.
Violet presses all the switches on the dashboard. Sunny crosses her legs, looking relaxed. A tape plays and the wipers start up. Violet picks up the car phone.
Count Olaf, hello, Poe. I'm calling you back about that inheritance question you raised.
Mr. Poe, thank goodness.
Who is this?
It's Violet Butler. We're in Count Olaf's car.
Oh, hello, Violet. Well, where's Count Olaf?
He's not here right now, but...
You're driving the car alone?
Train tracks and the train is coming.
I'm sorry, Violet. I can't hear the thing. I'm driving next to a train.
We're going to be hit by a train.
Right, yes, I can't hear because of the train.
No.
I'll call you back when I get to the bank. Goodbye.
Violet drops the phone, looking terrified. In the distance, the train approaches.
Klaus, you've read books on trains. What do we do?
Violet ties up her hair. Klaus visualizes from the library a book, trains, tracks, and switching devices.
Track switcher. There.
They both look through the window at the track switching lever.
It's too far away.
There has to be something we can use to pull it.
There's nothing in here.
There's always something.
Violet strips the trim off the car seat.
Sunny, bite the head off that elf.
Sunny says love to and reaches for the doll. Olaf is trying on sunglasses in the shop. He looks out at the car. Violet pulls a spring out of the car seat and threads the trim through it. She attaches one end of the trim to the doll's head. She uses the head to force open a quarter light and drops the head out. She pulls the trim tight until the head and the spring are jammed against the closed window. She releases the trim and the head shoots towards the lever but stops short.
Quick, roll back in.
The children reel in the trim until the spring and head are tight against the window again.
Violet, I got it.
I don't mean to rush you.
They release it and it reaches the lever and coils around it.
Nice shot.
Thank you. Pull.
They pull hard on the cord and the lever slowly moves. The train approaches. The tracks switch slowly. Olaf lowers a magazine he is reading in the shop and watches the train. The children heave. Olaf grins. The train is almost upon the car. The track moves at the last moment. The train misses the car by a whisker. Olaf's face drops. He sees the car vibrate as the train passes. The children smile with relief as it hurtles past them. Sunny claps. Olaf leans forward to watch. Mr. Poe pulls up behind the children and hoots. Olaf ducks down, retrieves his key and opens the locks from the shop. The driver's window opens. Sunny leans out. Poe looks shocked. Sunny blows him a kiss.
Mr. Poe, dear Mr. Poe, can't we discuss this like reasonable men?
I'm sorry, Count Olaf. Allowing a child of Sunny's age to drive a car is simply not good parenting.
He tried to kill us.
Let us not exaggerate, Klaus. The vehicle was not even in gear.
May I have a moment alone with the children?
They're in Poe's car.
Goodbye, kids. It's been fun.
I'm going to get you no matter where you go, no matter what you do, I'll find you. You are so deceased.
Olaf turns away and puts drops in his eyes to simulate tears.
Take them, Mr. Poe. Before I lose it big time.
Trumping a talentless villain might seem all in a day's work for three ingenious orphans. But the Baudelaires savoured their victory as they sped towards their new home. What lay ahead for them was unclear, but they remained cautiously optimistic that their next guardian would be better than the last. Or at least, wouldn't try to flatten them with a train.
Poe's car pulls up outside a large wooden house. Violet wanders in the garden amongst statues of snakes.
Do you know what kind of scientist he is?
No, I don't. I was far too busy making arrangements for you three. I didn't have time for chit-chat. Hello! Oh, my goodness! Look at you! You must be Violet! Do you remember me? I don't suppose so. You were just a little baby at the time. And Klaus, we've never met. How do you do? What a firm grip, like a Burmese python. And Sunny, little Sunny, you look so much like your dear mother. Thank you very much, Mr. Poe. I'll take it from here.
Well, perhaps I should come inside.
Oh, by all means. You could help us pick out the gutworms from the bowel of the viscid boa.
Children, remember, if you need me any time, you can reach me by phone or fax. Good day.
Poe leaves hurriedly.
Well, we got rid of him, didn't we? Come in, come in. There's not much time and we have to pack.
Pack?
The children follow Uncle Monty.
Did you say pack?
Oh, yes, we have to pack all the equipment. Then there's the essentials like clothing and such, and we have to tag all of the snakes who are coming with us.
Coming where?
Oh, did I mention we're going to Peru?
No.
Yes, we are going to Peru tomorrow morning. Isn't that exciting? This way to the reptile room.
Monty has a snake round his neck.
Welcome to my humble abode. You children know anything about snakes?
Only what I've read in books.
No, not very much.
Well, we may have one or two things here that aren't in books. I'll just put the big fellow in his bed and introduce you to a few of my friends. Over here.
That's the two-headed cobra.
Well spotted.
Is that a he or a she?
I have no idea. Didn't think it polite to ask. And over here, the Tibetan third eye toad. We can't stop this fellow chanting Om Ribbit. And now, children, you have to see my latest discovery. Found him in Tanzania. One of a kind, the incredibly deadly viper. My assistant Gustav and I may be the only people ever to have seen him.
Uncle Monty and the children look through the bars of a huge cage. It seems empty but for a tree trunk and foliage. The cage door handle moves slowly. Violet and Klaus look anxious. The door flies open and a giant snake rears up its jaws wide open.
Oh, I'm sorry. My ribbon just jammed. Let me just adjust it here.
The storyteller opens his typewriter.
There we are. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, the attack of the incredibly deadly viper.
Not to worry, little one. You're all right. It can't possibly harm you. Here we go.
The incredibly deadly viper couldn't have possibly harmed her?
No.
Uncle Monty locks the snake back in.
The big softy. One of the least harmful and most friendly creatures in the animal kingdom. It's a misnomer. I only called him that to play a prank on those stuffed shirts down at the Herpetological Society.
Uncle Monty, why are we going to Peru?
Just this morning I was wondering, how are we all going to get out of town together? And I thought, Peru. They have snakes in Peru, don't they?
But why are we getting out of town?
Violet, do you know snakes are more afraid of you than you are of them? Few people do. When threatened, a snake will retreat to a place that is quiet, safe, remote. A sanctuary where it can feel out of danger. That's why Peru.
He has a spyglass tucked in his belt.
Wait, that spyglass. I saw one just like that in our desk.
Plenty of time for chit-chat later. But right now, what I need is an inventor, a reader, and a biter. Know any?
My teeth are at your service, sir, says Sonny. Uncle Monty plays a small harp, a striped snake wrapped round his wrist.
High upon highlands and low upon Tay. Bonnie George Campbell rode out on a day. Saddled and bridled, so gallant rode he. Home came his good horse, but never came he. Petunia, what have I told you about this? She thinks I'm a tree, you know.
I think I know that song. I think our parents used to play it for us.
They certainly did, as I did for mine.
You had children?
Oh, yes. And a wife and a home. Until the fire.
A fire?
I may know better than anyone what you're going through. But it's going to be all right. We'll be among people who understand us, people who are like us. People who appreciate unique children who can read and invent and bite things.
Violet smiles.
Uncle Monty, why are you doing all this for us?
Isn't that what family does?
And so, the Baudelaire children went to Peru and together had wonderful adventures with their loving and wonderful new guardian. The end. These are the words I desperately wish I could type. Oh, I would give anything to say that the story ends here. But alas, my mission is not to weave happy endings where they do not occur, but to report the actual events in the lives of the unfortunate Baudelaire children. And as much as it pains me, I must confess that their troubles had only just begun. And it did so with two musical notes.
Smiling, Violet and Klaus open the front door to a sinister man in glasses and a lab coat. Their faces drop.
Hello. I am looking for Dr. Montgomery Montgomery. I am Stefano. I am an Italian man, and I am here to assist him in his research as best I can, as well as to facilitate and remain observatory.
Count Olaf.
Hello. Now, why would you say something like that? I have never met such a person as a Count Olaf, but if I had, I'm sure he would look and sound completely different.
You're Olaf, and we're not letting you in.
Klaus tries to shut the door. Olaf jams a knife in it.
Well, perhaps you should reevaluate your hypothesis. Anyway, that's why you should never run with one of these, kids.
Words of wisdom indeed, Mr. Stefano.
Oops, you caught me being a mentor.
And bless you for coming at such short notice.
Not at all, not at all.
My chief assistant, Gustav, took sick and phoned not 1 hour ago.
He'd give anything to be here right now.
Gustav is tied to the front of a train.
Thank goodness you were available.
Well, I am a fan. If I may gush, your work has profoundly influenced my research up at the Monterey Bay Aquarium on the sea snake. It's a very volatile animal that I've been bitten 4,700 times, mostly on the face. A lot of this has been reconstructed, but I think they did one heck of a job, even though my mustache is a tad askew.
You can't be buying this.
But I wonder if I could get the kids to help me in with my bags. My left side is somewhat neurologically challenged.
But of course, children.
Uncle Monty.
Please, let us not be rude to our guest. Now go on.
What's he up to? I don't know.
There is no good moment, of course, for a notorious villain to arrive. But the timing of Olaf's reappearance, just when Dr. Montgomery's secret could be revealed to the children, was almost more than Klaus could bear.
Violet, listen to me. Monty Spyglass, I saw the exact same one in Dad's desk.
Klaus, it's just a coincidence.
Violet, no, everything happens for a reason.
Now, the children will be helping us extensively with the research in Peru. Do you have any experience with children?
Children are strange and foreign to me. I never really was one. I know that they are an important part of the ecosystem.
He's never going to let us alone with Monty. We've got to get a message to him.
Leave that to me.
I was feeding the Mori. And, of course, I got cocky. And that's all it takes. That's all it takes is one time.
Olaf blows in his rubber glove.
Just once. I had the kipper in my mouth and I offered it. And there was a team from National Geographic that were there. They were filming the whole thing. And
Klaus takes Petunia, the striped snake, from its tank. A pen and ink are next to it.
Sure, it has a certain amount of strength. But
Violet ties up her hair.
Pull a man's face into a cave. Anyway,
Monty notices the snake on the floor. He picks it up. It coils around his wrist. On its body, the word imposter is written.
Beaches, the people. Relaxed guardianship laws?
Relaxed guardianship laws?
Did I say that?
Olaf twitches.
Darn neurotoxins.
Oh, Stefano, you have a wonderful gift for storytelling. Doesn't he, children?
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind milking Petunia for me.
Petunia? Well, the milking, Now, see, what I was... Could I just, Yeah, sure. I'll take a shot at that. They used to call me Old MacDonald up at the milking lab there because I'd milk these things all day long. But the little udders are hard to locate. Anyway, why don't you take that and go ahead and start the party without me. And I'm not sure I brought my milking gear. I'll take a gander.
As Olaf backs out of the room, he sticks his finger in a tank and snatches it away. He walks briskly out.
Is he still watching?
Olaf peers round a corner.
Yes.
Don't look at me. Pretend you're talking to Klaus.
Okay.
I got your message. Don't worry. I know.
You do?
Yes. Amor Eel would never eat kippers. Far too salty. And did you see the way he kept glancing into my satchel where I keep the exotic snake venoms? You children were right. Stefano is an imposter.
Yes.
He's a spy from the Herpetological Society. He's here to steal the incredibly deadly fiber.
No. No, Uncle Monty.
Oh! Burn! All finished. I was so looking forward to the milking. Isn't it about time you kids went to bed?
Absolutely. Early start tomorrow, children. Off you go. Good night.
The children slowly walk past Olaf, looking up at him.
Oh, and if you kids should get restless during the night, I'm right down the hall, and I'm a very light sleeper. In fact, I hardly sleep at all.
Violet looks around the bedroom door. In the corridor, Olaf sits in a rocking chair with a big knife.
Do you have a hall pass?
She goes back in and shuts the door.
I didn't think so.
Oh, Petunia, I'm going to miss you. You're such a good girl, aren't you? Such a pretty girl. You are. Yes, you are.
A dark figure appears behind Monty.
Oh, yes, you are.
It is a curious thing, the death of a loved one.
Uncle Monty?
It's like walking up the stairs to your bedroom in the dark and thinking that there's one more stair than there is. Your foot falls down through the air and there's a sickly moment of dark surprise.
Petunia lies dead.
Uncle Monty?
Monty is dead behind a curtain.
The children's grief was not only for their uncle, but for that tender hope that they may have found home again. A hope which, thanks to a villainous actor, was now slowly tumbling away.
I do feel somewhat responsible for this tragedy. I should have taken it upon myself to warn him that the incredibly deadly viper is the most deadly snake in the entire ecosystem. I should know. I discovered it.
You what?
Detective?
Little girl, the big cage door is open, no snake. Dead guy. You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, who woke me up at 9 a.m. for this?
It's definitely a snake bite. There's no question about it.
Snake bite? No question about it. Thanks, Doc.
No, you don't understand. The incredibly deadly viper couldn't have killed him because it's one of the least dangerous and most friendly creatures in the animal kingdom.
You mind if I skip the paperwork on this?
I think that'd be best. These kids have been through a major upheaval. I wonder if it's a good idea, even, to change their plans at this point. We were headed for Peru tomorrow. And
Sunny looks around. I'll handle this.
Doc, what do you think?
Could be the only chance for them to get closure.
Closure! Thank you, Doc.
From interviews with witnesses who were there that day, I have learned the following about the youngest Baudelaire's plan. Brave Sunny started here and approached the incredibly deadly viper with single-minded determination.
No, he's Count Olaf and that doctor is his accomplice.
He tried to kill us with a train.
And where would this man get a train?
Where am I going to get a train?
Now, children, that's enough of this foolishness. Mr. Stefano, there's absolutely no resemblance to Count Olaf.
Sunny watches the loose viper.
Count Olaf, they keep speaking.
Count Olaf is their old guardian who made an error in judgment.
What about the tattoo? Count Olaf had a tattoo of an eye on his ankle.
Anything for the kids.
He lifts his trouser leg.
Voila! Spick and span.
Well, he's an actor. He covered it with makeup.
Poe looks skeptical.
Doctor? I wonder if you could help me escort these young children to the vehicle.
No, Mr. Poe.
No, Mr. Poe.
No.
About one thing, all the witnesses agreed. The sound they heard next was so shocking, so surprising, it still haunts them to this day.
Sunny is standing in the coils of the viper. She's cuddling it. It's kissing her. The policeman and Poe look on horrified. Violet smiles.
Damn it. This was such a good character.
Sunny plays with a snake. The children turn and look pale as they realise Olaf and his sidekick have disappeared, leaving their disguises on the floor. The children are in Poe's car.
Rest assured, children. The authorities are in hot pursuit of Mr. Stefano, from his eyebrowless forehead to his untattooed ankle. The Italian fiend.
Though still in the clutches of a clueless banker, the Baudelaires celebrated their unmasking of Count Olaf as they skimmed their way across the icy surface of Lake Lacrimose. But Klaus wasn't the sort to think on the surface of anything. He knew there was something beneath their journey, even though all he had to go on was a spyglass, the knowledge of another terrible fire, and two words on a slip of paper.
Aunt Josephine?
Never heard of her.
Does it strike you as odd that none of our relatives are related to us?
A wide open eye appears at the spy hole of a door. The children walk up to a dark, spooky house balanced precariously on stilts overhanging the lake. The door opens. A blonde lady with glasses and her hair in a bun peers out nervously.
Aunt Josephine?
Baudelaires. Is that you?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, good. Come in, come in, come in. Hurricane Herman is about to arrive at any time now. Oh, Violet. Look at you.
Hello.
Come in quickly, quickly, children.
What's
the matter? Not that quickly. You could trip over the welcome mat and decapitate yourself. Too quickly. All right?
Violet looks at Klaus. She carries Sunny. They follow Aunt Josephine indoors. The house shakes.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's so chilly in here. Sometimes it gets so cold I can hardly stand it.
Would you like me to turn the radiator up for you, Aunt Josephine?
Oh, no. I never turn on the radiator. I'm frightened that it might explode. Oh, children, I must ask you not to use any of the doorknobs in the house. Just push on the wood of the door, and it'll open.
Why?
Well, I'm always afraid that the doorknobs will shatter into a million tiny pieces, and one of them will hit my eye.
Someone's been to Crazy Town, says Sunny.
Delmo is not a word. I can see that I'm going to have to teach her proper English.
Aunt Josephine, in a black Victorian gown, picks up a book.
Grammar is the greatest joy in life, don't you find?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
She's the mayor of Crazy Town, says Sunny. Josephine pours soup.
Perfect. It's nice hot soup.
Actually, it's chilled cucumber soup. I never cook anything hot. I'm afraid that the stove will burst into flames. Where's your brother?
Kitchen.
Klaus? What are you doing?
Napkins?
Oh, napkins are here. Come away from the fridge. If it falls, it'll crush you flat.
Klaus looks at the fridge, bewildered.
What? Would you like to see some pictures?
Josephine hands Violet a photo album.
Yeah, oh, careful. Don't get a paper cut.
Who's this, Ike?
Wasn't he handsome?
Violet smiles at the black and white photos.
Look at all the things you did, Aunt Josephine.
You tame lions? Oh, I was quite adventurous when Ike was alive.
There are pictures of her standing on an alligator, hanging from an aircraft, shooting a bow and arrow. Violet holds a photo of a group of smiling people, all with spyglasses, including Monty.
Uncle Monty? You knew Uncle Monty?
No, that's not a good picture of me.
Wait, is that our parents?
Was this some sort of club? Why do you all have these spyglasses?
I don't like the way I look in that picture.
Josephine snatches the album.
Did I die in a fire?
No. Silly child, no. He was eaten by leeches.
Okay.
Come, I'll show you.
Watch the chandelier, children. If it falls, it'll impale you.
Josephine pulls a chain which moves a curtain from a huge round window at the back of the house. It overlooks the big grey lake. The children walk over to it. She takes Klaus's hand.
Mike and I explored every cove and inlet of Lake Lacrimose from Horrid Harbor all the way over to Curdled Cave, way over there. And near that rock is where the leeches attacked. Lacrimose leeches have six rows of very sharp teeth and one very sharp nose. They are blind, but they can smell food on a human from miles away, and if they smell food, they will swarm.
Josephine sits down.
I told him, Ike, you must wait 1 hour before going into the water. But he only waited 45 minutes. And...
Violet nods at Klaus. He leaves. Violet looks disgusted as Josephine sobs on her knees. Klaus peers round a door.
I apologize, children. Klaus! That area is private. That was Ike's room. Oh, God, I hate it here.
Well, Josephine, have you ever thought of maybe moving someplace else? Maybe if you moved away from Lake Lacrimose, you might feel better.
Oh, I could never sell this house. I'm terrified of realtors.
There are two kinds of fears, rational and irrational. Being afraid of realtors is an irrational fear.
Is this a bad time?
A realtor appears on the step showing her card. Josephine opens the door a crack.
We gotta get her out of the house.
Josephine and the children shop in a market on the lake shore.
Watch out for those avocados. The pit could become lodged in our throats. And watch out for that cart. It could break free and run us over.
Sonny drops an apple.
Everything's fine, Aunt Josephine.
Lord Thunder and Jumped Up Jehovah.
The Black Plague! Is it the Black Plague?
No, that there was only my fault. Well, I can't tell you how sorry I is for running into your sister there like that.
Aunt Josephine, this...
Couple of right beauties, yar, mum. Especially you.
Aunt Josephine.
Oh, but allow me to introduce myself.
No, allow Klaus and I to introduce him.
This... Klaus and me?
Oh. It doesn't matter. This...
Doesn't matter!
Are you checking me, girl? Why? Perhaps it's just the ramblings of an expert fisherman, but grammar is the number one most important thing in this here world to me.
It is.
Is she desperate?
It's the whole ballywax. The entire kit and caboodle. Why, without your good grammar, the whole darn shooting match could go harsh over a ticket.
Well, you can certainly turn a phrase.
I can flip it up and rub it down, too. Of course, that would be entirely up to you, Mum. Captain Shab. At your service.
He's lying. He's Count Olaf. That horrible man you warned me about, where? Who?
Right in front of you.
Where's he at?
Behind Captain Shab.
Oh.
No.
I'll show him a thing or two. I'll give him the old wax on, wax off, me son.
Captain Shab is Count Olaf. Oh. I'm not going through this again.
Klaus knocks Olaf over, revealing a wooden leg.
Klaus! Why did you do this? This poor man. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Whoa. Oh, that's gonna spark in the morning. Oh, I don't pay that. No, never mind, Mum. He's just a boy barely out of his osh kosh bagosh. Oh, I've had to deal with that sort of thing ever since my leg was chewed off by the Lacrimose leeches. Why didn't I wait an hour before swimming? Why?
The leeches took my husband, too.
Get out of town.
No, really.
By jeez, them blessed leeches doomed me to a life of hopping like that. Sure, I get the good parking spots, but who could love a man with one leg and a face like a hen's arse? I'm as lonely as a gull on a rock barrel.
Oh, Captain Shab. Would You come to my house for dinner this evening?
No!
Oh, no, I don't know about that, Mum. I'm afraid I might scuff up the floors with this old crib bag.
Oh, well, I will lay down newspapers. Please, the children are going to make a lovely dinner of puttanesca.
The very meal I ate before they took my leg!
Oh, my goodness, well, children, I'm going to take Capucham home, and you stay here and shop for an entirely puttanesca free dinner.
But
is not a sentence, Klaus.
Aunt Josephine.
Hey! You haven't paid for that!
The market stallholders are Olaf's actors.
Kids today.
It's dark and windy. Carrying the shopping, the children return to Josephine's house, past a sign which says, "Does anyone know you are going this way?" They let themselves into the spooky house. It's dark.
Aunt Josephine?
They go into the kitchen. The house is shaking violently. They walk over to the big round window overlooking the lake. It has a hole in the middle.
Oh, no. No.
They look down at the grey, stormy water below. It's blowing a gale.
Too late. We're too late.
Klaus notices a piece of paper attached to the chains by the window. He takes it off.
What does it say?
It's a suicide note. Violet, Klaus, and Sonny. By the time you read this, my life will be at its end. My heart is as cold as ice, and I find life unbearable. Unbearable?
Go on.
I know you children may not understand the sad life of a dowager. Dowager has one D.
It doesn't matter. Keep going.
Or what would have led to this desperate act? Act is spelt with a C.
It's a suicide note. Why are you checking your spelling?
She said her greatest joy in life was grammar. Why is she making all these mistakes?
If you were about to jump out a window, you might make a few spelling mistakes, too. Please know that I'm much happier this way. As my last will and testament, I leave you three in the care of Captain Sham, a kind and honorable man. That was his plan. He made her write this note, and then he pushed her out the window.
Klaus visualizes books he's read about odes and ciphers.
No, it's not a suicide note. It's a message. It's not supposed to be ice. It's supposed to be ice. See? Unbearable to you.
Klaus circles the letters and makes the words curdled cave. Meanwhile, the wooden stilts holding up the house are coming apart, the nails working loose.
All the way over to curdled cave, way over there.
She's not dead. She's hiding.
Curdled cave?
The house lurches down. The front door flies off and hurtles through the house. Violet and Klaus leap to one side as it flies past them and through the round window. Sunny is looking up at the rows of photos of fires hanging in a dark room, with newspaper cuttings also about fires. The papers fly about in the wind.
He was investigating fires.
Klaus grabs one. It has a drawing of an eye on it. Klaus and Violet look at each other, recognizing the eye from Olaf's front door, throne and tattoo.
Klaus, we gotta go.
The stilts below the house start to give way. What's left of the round window smashes. The back of the house falls into the lake. The fridge is sliding across the floor towards them.
Come away from the fridge! If it falls, it could crush his flat!
Violet grabs Sunny as the fridge hurtles out of the back of the sloping house. Plates fall off a rack on the wall. Cupboard doors fly open. The children walk uphill towards the front door. The stove lurches forward. The oven doors fall open. The foam comes off the wall. Sparks ignite the stove. The supports below break up. The flaming cooker crashes through a hole in the floor, landing behind a boat, giving a duck a nasty shock. A loose gas pipe alight points at a door and melts the handle. It shatters. The children fall to the floor and cover their eyes.
No way!
The children lie face down on the floor while the contents of the house fly past them.
Is it over?
A fire extinguisher just misses Klaus's head. Klaus looks up.
Violet, you better tie your hair up.
Violet looks up. They are stranded on a small piece of floor like a platform, separated from the remains of the house, supported by broken stilts, teetering high over the lake. They look over the edge at the stormy water far below.
Violet? Ideas?
Violet sees an anchor lodged in a dresser on the other side of the platform. She gets up and inches slowly towards it, preparing to tie up her hair.
Bring me that fire extinguisher.
Why?
Because we need to move this anchor over there.
What?
Just help me!
The children put down the anchor on the fire extinguisher and brass cylindrical vases and roll it along till it reaches the edge of the platform.
That's free, we're gonna break that beam.
Break it?
Yes.
Well, that's the only thing keeping us up.
Exactly.
Are you sure you're tied your hair tight enough?
On three. One. Two. Three.
They push the anchor over the edge. It smashes through a support. The platform tilts towards the house. Violet picks up Sunny.
Wait. Hold on, Sunny. Now!
As the platform lurches towards the house, the children jump. They land in what's left of the house and run through it onto the edge of the cliffs, just as the last bit of the house crashes down into the lake.
What do we do now?
She's alive. We have to go to the authorities.
No.
What?
They won't listen. They never listen.
Violet!
It's Olaf. He'll never stop. We have to find her. Ourselves.
Hey, you kids! It's Captain Sham, your new guardian. You just stay where you're at and we'll come where you're told.
Ever read any books on sailing?
Klaus had read exactly 15 books on sailing and 2 books on meteorology. But it is one thing to do something in theory, another to do it in practice. Little could have prepared them for the crossing to Curdled Cave at the hands of an angry and ill-humoured lake. But as the storm passed and the waters calmed, the Baudelaires couldn't help but feel a small sense of accomplishment, a rare moment of joy in their otherwise woeful lives. They had made it. And if their guardian could not rescue them, then they would rescue their guardian.
The children pull down the sail on the wooden boat. They paddle into a dimly lit cave. It has a for sale sign outside it.
Aunt Josephine?
Strange rock formations line the walls of the cavernous space. It's dark and damp. The water is inky. They paddle slowly up to a rocky platform and get out.
Aunt Josephine?
Violet carries Sunny. With Klaus, she slowly walks forward, looking around. Above on a ledge, disheveled, Josephine crawls on all fours.
Aunt Josephine!
Oh, children, you did it! You deciphered the clues in my note.
I'm so glad you're okay.
It was so horrible. Count Olaf forced me to write that will, and then it nearly killed me to add in all those grammatical errors. So did you bring groceries?
Groceries? We just came through a storm.
Well, so? How do you expect us to live in this cave if you didn't bring any food?
live in the cave?
No. And Josephine, you have to come back with us. You willed us to Captain Shem. You're the only proof we have it's a lie.
Oh, No. It's much too dangerous. Children, I'm very sorry.
Too dangerous? You're our guardian. You're supposed to take care of us.
I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
You know, Aunt Josephine, Kirtle Cave is for sale.
So?
Before too long, people are going to come to look at it. And some of those people will be realtors.
Josephine clamps her hand over her mouth, horrified. It's sunset. They paddle away from the cave. Josephine looks nervous in a life jacket. Klaus produces the drawing of an eye from his pocket and holds it up.
Aunt Josephine, what does this mean?
Where did you find that?
I found it in Knight's room.
The fires.
Why was he investigating fires?
We all were. Uncle Monty, I can...
Our parents.
They were our leaders.
Children, there are good people and bad people in the world. The ones who start the fires and the ones who put them out.
Who's doing this?
Is it Olaf?
I've said too much already. Your parents knew the answer to that. And look what happened to them.
Our parents? What did they say?
We should never have left that cave. It's not too late for us to turn around now, and I'll just take my chances with the realtors.
Aunt Josephine, what did our parents say?
We're going to die.
Josephine looks past Klaus.
What?
It's the leeches!
She points at the horizon. Violet and Klaus turn to look.
I guess it's a good thing none of us have eaten in a while, then.
Guess again, says Sunny, revealing a banana skin by Auntie Josephine. She throws it overboard.
Aunt Josephine!
They watch in horror as a wave of leeches move across the lake towards them. Josephine holds Sunny. The leeches hurl themselves at the boat and eat their way through. Water spurts in.
What do we do?
We're sinking.
Klaus, paddle, please!
Klaus tries to paddle. Big leeches stick to the oar. He throws it away. Violet bails out the water. She spots a light.
There's a boat! Over here!
But as unpleasant as lachrymose leeches could be, there was something far more unpleasant arriving out of the fog.
Hello. I missed you guys. Looks like you could use a little assistance.
You're gonna need assistance when we get back to town. Aunt Josephine's gonna tell everyone what happened.
And then I'll be arrested and sent to jail, and you'll live happily ever after with a friendly guardian, spending your time inventing things and reading books and sharpening your little monkey teeth, and bravery and nobility will prevail at last, and this wicked world will slowly but surely become a place of cheerful harmony, and everyone will be singing and dancing and giggling like the littlest elf. A happy ending. Is that what you had in mind? Because I hardly think that anybody is going to believe a dead woman.
You're not going to touch Aunt Josephine, and she's going to tell everyone what happened.
No. I won't tell anybody anything, I promise. Please don't throw me to the leeches. You can have the fortune. You can have the children.
Aunt Josephine!
She hands Sunny to Olaf.
Welcome aboard. Hot potato.
I'll go, May. I'll dye my hair. I'll change my name.
But what about us?
Quiet, child. The adults are talking.
Oh.
I suppose I don't have to kill you.
No.
On the other hand, with that little stunt of yours at the window, you hadn't been a very trustworthy person. But I got you a little mercy.
Oh! I haven't.
What?
Yeah, you said hadn't. That's bad grammar. You should have said you haven't been a very trustworthy person.
Thank you for correcting me.
No, Aunt Josephine! Aunt Josephine!
Aunt Josephine!
You can't...
Josephine is left alone in the sinking boat.
Well, you get the picture.
A banana skin floats on the surface.
Aunt Josephine.
Well, we've done all we can do. Everybody be cool.
Children, is that you?
Mr. Paul, where?
Drowning.
Olaf ducks Klaus's head over the side of the boat.
I saved him! I saved the boy from the leeches! Back to the depths, you fingery devils! You will not devour this boy's head today.
Olaf clasps Klaus to his chest. Klaus breaks free.
Count Olaf? What are you doing here?
Mr. Pope, please. Count Olaf! What are you doing here, man?
I know, I shouldn't have come. But when I heard the children were in danger, I had to. Even if I'm not fit to be their guardian.
It appears I was wrong about you, Count Olaf.
No!
You have proven yourself to be an exceptionally capable guardian. And I would be remiss in my responsibility if I did not place the children with you immediately.
Oh.
Why, if it weren't for you...
Don't say it! I can't stand the thought of losing my little treasures. Even the thought of the massive inheritance would be a constant reminder of my heartache.
Well, there's no need to fret about that. The law clearly states that you would not inherit the Baudelaire fortune if anything happened to the children.
Say what?
No, with the exception, of course, of blood relatives and married couples.
Really?
Olaf looks as if he's having a brainwave as he hugs the reluctant children.
Mr. Poe, have I told you about our new play?
A screen unfurls on stage. It says Count Olaf, The Marvelous Marriage. An actor with two hooks for hands takes people's coats. They rip on the hooks. A critic walks into the theatre.
Critic!
Cape, sir.
Don't try to get on my good side.
Backstage, Violet wears a wedding dress. Klaus holds the law book.
What is he up to? Why are we in the play?
He's using this as a prop. It says that if two people are married, they're entitled to any money that either of them has.
No, but it's just a play. He can't get a fortune by marrying me in a play.
Oh, can't I?
Conspirators. Caesar must die.
In order to be a valid marriage, it has to be administered by a bona fide justice of the peace. It says so right here.
Justice Strauss, are you ready for your debut?
Look at you. Violet, you look so beautiful. You are the bride. I'm the judge. Who's the groom?
No, Justice Strauss, you don't understand. The play is real.
Yes, it must be real. That's why I cast you. All the other actors I saw lacked the proper, what's the word I'm looking for?
Hair?
Hands? Verisimilitude. Now remember, Justice Strauss, you must say the words exactly as you would in the real wedding. Get it absolutely right. There are talent scouts in the audience looking for someone your age. It's all riding on this one.
Oh, why did you have to tell me that?
Oh, yeah. Take her to makeup. Enjoy. Embrace the butterflies.
This is ridiculous. Violet's only 14. She can't be legally married.
She can if she has the permission of her guardian. And who's that?
Oh, yes.
Me! Look it up, bookworm. Yes, once you say I do and sign the marriage certificate, you'll really be my lovely bride. You cook and clean and massage my bunions and clip my thick yellow toenails. Hey, marriage is no picnic. You gotta work at it.
I'll never say I do. Never.
I think you might.
Olaf has a walkie-talkie.
Won't you look up there?
Violet and Klaus look up. Sunny is suspended high up in a cage.
Let her go!
Gladly. Let her go.
The cage drops.
Put a hold on that.
It stops.
If you don't say I do, or if anything should happen to interrupt this performance, I say one word into this, and down will come, baby. Cradle and all. Clang!
How could you? She's an infant.
Oh, Violet. Violet. You're 14 years old. You should know by now that you can't have everything you want. You want a life of happiness? A roof over your head? A place to call your own and all that jazz.
Olaf leans over Violet close to her face.
And what about what I want? I want that enormous fortune. And for all investigations against me to cease. You're going to help me get what I want.
Olaf straightens up and cups his ear with his hand.
My public awaits. Mi mamo, mi mamo.
Ladies and gentlemen, could you put your appendages together for the model's marriage?
No, you're not going to go through with this.
We have to. Oh, come on. There's always something. There's always something. Not this time.
But... come on, you're on.
Go, Klaus.
Fine.
Go!
Move your hump, camel, you're on!
Klaus slowly walks on stage. Violet looks desperate.
Nothing in the world will keep the cow from his beloved bride. Nothing in the world will keep the cow from his beloved bride. Nothing in the world, nothing in the world. Nothing! Nothing!
The curtain opens. Klaus sheds his costume and runs round to the back of the open-air theatre, hiding round a corner of the building. Sunny rattles the bars of her cage. Klaus looks up. The cage is suspended hundreds of feet up.
What would Violet do? What would Violet do? There's always something. There's always something.
Klaus's eyes alight on a pile of junk.
A lamb. The groom is a calf.
And nowhere near as handsome as the count.
He picks up the frame of an old umbrella and opens it. He attaches the umbrella to a rope. He throws the umbrella through an open window. Using it as an anchor, he climbs up the rope.
But wait! What is this?
The actress points up. The audience turns round. Klaus freezes on the back wall. A toy aircraft flies above the audience. Klaus relaxes.
I didn't know they had this kind of budget.
Klaus carries on climbing. Olaf is lowered on stage as if from a parachute.
Yes, it is I! Come to marry my bride! And you, sir, have been taken by surprise.
Caution. This next scene could get pretty graphic.
Away, rapscallion!
Olaf chops the head off a mannequin and flails about as he is suspended above the stage. Klaus carries on climbing.
Can I get some slack?
Let the wedding begin!
Olaf's airman costume is ripped off to reveal his wedding outfit. At the back of the audience, a spotlight falls on Violet, dressed as a bride. She is on the arm of a man dressed as half man, half woman. The justice walks on stage, then off again. Olaf follows her. Violet looks anguished. Klaus is swinging high above the ground. On stage, Olaf takes Violet's hand and places a ring on her finger. Klaus has almost reached the cage.
Count Olaf, take this to be your lawfully wedded wife, in sickness and in health, till death do you part.
Until death? I most certainly do.
The umbrella and rope fall past Klaus.
Do you, Violet Baudelaire, take this Count Olaf to be your lawfully wedded husband, in sickness and in health, till death do you part.
Justice Strauss.
Olaf pulls up the aerial of his walkie-talkie and stares at her.
I do. Oh,
she doesn't deserve love. Are you thinking that? No, she doesn't.
Now, all that is...
Sonny?
Happy this union shall be.
Official and legal.
A desk slides on stage. Olaf dips a quill in ink and signs the marriage certificate. Violet looks up and sees Sunny's cage being pulled in. Olaf holds out the pen for her. Klaus is reeling in the cage.
Sunny, where's the key? The key to the lock.
Sunny points and says the eye. Klaus looks out at a window at the top of the tower with an eye shape in it. He takes the piece of paper from his pocket with the eye design on it. He holds up the drawing. It's identical. Violet slowly starts to sign the document with her left hand.
Right hand, please.
She swaps hands and looks up. A shaft of moonlight pierces the clouds and shines on the tower. Klaus looks at the light. The powerful beam, deflected on a mirror, is focused on a glass disc at the centre of the eye. Klaus tiptoes towards it. Violet slowly starts to sign the form. The moon goes behind a cloud. The beam disappears. Violet writes very slowly. Klaus walks right up to the lens in the middle of the eye and stares into it at an image of his burnt-out home.
Children, I'm afraid I must inform you of an extremely unfortunate event. I'm very, very sorry to tell you this, but your parents have perished in a fire that's destroyed your entire home.
These things don't just happen.
Sunny points behind you. The man with hooks for hands lunges at Klaus.
What did you free little love?
Let's finish here.
Swings at Klaus and falls out of the window. Violet finishes her signature.
What is it? Kind of busy right now.
We've got a problem.
Where are you?
Look up.
Olaf looks up. The hooked man is hanging from Sunny's cage.
And so concludes our play.
No, wait, it wasn't a play. Count Olaf was going to kill Sunny if I didn't go through with the marriage.
Ridiculous.
No, you have to listen to me. He was only marrying me to get to the Baudelaire fortune.
No, that part is true, actually.
What?
Violet and I are indeed a blissfully wedded couple, because you see,
we were married in an official ceremony with official and legal vows in front of a bona fide justice of the peace.
Oh my God, what have I done?
I'm sorry, I didn't know!
First order of business! Put the other two brats up for adoption, separately, into the far corners of the earth. These
people
are meddlesome when they're together.
Mr. Poe!
You unspeakable cad! Arrest him!
For what?
For being a greedy monster!
Come on.
Klaus looks for the moon.
Oh, I'm the monster.
I'm the monster.
You're the monster.
Come on.
These children tried to tell you, but you wouldn't listen. No one ever listens to children.
Come on.
You think you're innocent? You're
accomplices. The certificate says that I have the fortune now. Come on.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
The moon comes out from behind a cloud. A beam of light sets the marriage certificate on fire.
What do you think? Too diabolical? Give me some feedback.
Olaf sees the paper burning in his hand. Olaf looks up. Klaus stands behind the glass eye at the top of the tower. Violet smiles. The policeman and Poe look angry.
Hey, marriage is no picnic. Oh, and by the way, you're a terrible actor.
No. Let's keep our heads here. If you do anything to me, you're just sinking to my level.
Not to mention setting a terrible example for the children.
Guilty.
I am thrilled to say that Count Olaf was captured for crimes too numerous to mention. And before serving his life sentence, it was the judge's decree that Olaf be made to suffer every hardship that he forced upon the children.
Olaf falls off a high platform into the lake. He fights off leeches in a sinking boat. He's locked in a car on a track as a train hurtles towards it.
Baudelaire's had triumphed, a word which here means unmasking a cruel and talentless arsonist and solving the mystery of the Baudelaire fire. If only justice were as kind. Count Olaf vanished after a jury of his peers overturned his sentence. As for the Baudelaires, what lay ahead for them was unclear. But one thing they knew as they climbed once again into the back of Mr. Poe's car. They were moving on.
Don't worry, children. I'm sure the authorities will catch up with Count Olaf very soon. No, we'll never have to deal with that terrible man again.
Violet and Klaus look at each other in the back of Poe's car.
Before we leave, perhaps there's time for just one last stop.
Violet and Klaus lean forward through the car window. They see their beautiful family mansion as if it were restored. They get out and look up in wonder at the magnificent front door. They walk into the huge hall. Sunlight streams in. Sunny walks between Violet and Klaus, holding their hands. They stand and look at the magnificent double staircases sweeping down to the marble floor. The house grows dark and turns to its blackened, burnt-out state before their eyes. Sunny looks round with a solemn expression. Pieces of ash fall like snow. They turn and see the front doorbell ringing. Violet picks up Sunny. They go over to the remains of the mail basket.
Klaus and Sunny. It's addressed to us.
Look at all these postmarks. It's been to England and Rome and Kenya and Iceland. I don't even know where these are from.
Who's it from?
He turns the envelope over. It says Mr. and Mrs. Baudelaire.
Mom and Dad.
Klaus opens it. Violet takes the letter.
The letter that never came. Dearest children, since we've been abroad, we have missed you all so much. Certain events have compelled us to extend our travels. One day, when you're older, you will learn all about the people we have befriended and the dangers we have faced. At times, the world can seem an unfriendly and sinister place. But believe us when we say that there is much more good in it than bad. All you have to do is look hard enough. And what might seem to be a series of unfortunate events may, in fact, be the first steps of a journey. We hope to have you back in our arms soon, darlings. But in case this letter arrives before our return, know that we love you. It fills us with pride to know that no matter what happens in this life, that you three will take care of each other with kindness and bravery and selflessness, as you always have. And remember one thing, my darlings, and never forget it. That no matter where we are, know that as long as you have each other, you have your family, and you are home. Your loving parents.
Violet looks at Klaus and Sunny. Klaus looks down at the envelope. There is something in it. He slides out a brass spyglass.
Passing the torch is a rite of passage that can take many forms. But perhaps the least known, and most surprising, is the passing of a spyglass.
Lemony Snicket is writing the story behind a huge clock face. He uses a spyglass to look out through the giant dial. He sits at his typewriter and pulls out the last piece of paper amongst the big cogs and wheels inside the clock.
Dear reader, there are people in the world who know no misery and woe, and they take comfort in cheerful films about twittering birds and giggling elves. There are people who know that there's always a mystery to be solved, and they take comfort in researching and writing down any important evidence. But this story is not about such people. This story is about the Baudelaires. And they are the sort of people who know that there's always something. Something to invent, something to read, something to bite, and something to do to make a sanctuary, no matter how small.
Lemony has packed up his manuscript and put it on a pulley, sending it high above the clock face. He packs up his typewriter and drives off.
And for this reason, I am happy to say, the Baudelaires were very fortunate indeed.
The children are asleep in the back of Poe's car, their heads leaning against each other, looking peaceful. The car drives along a tree-lined lane towards the sun. The end.
Swaggering back onto the high seas 1 week from now is the one, the only, Captain Jack Sparrow, and this time he's in a spot of bother with the legendary Davy Jones and his army of sea phantoms. That's Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, new to Sky Box Office next Wednesday. And don't forget fun-loving Fat Albert here on Sky Movies. Along with the rest of the Cosby kids, he'll be popping out of the TV screen to become a real human being in this week's Sunday Family Film. Thank you.